Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, our good martini, once again, is not so great news for Hillary Clinton. This one doesn't actually deal with potential criminal activity or tanking poll numbers. This one is in response to an interview with Wolf Blitzer on CNN the day after the Republican presidential debate, and she did a pretty horrible job. One of the things that Blitzer brought up was Carly Fiorina's comment that if you want to stump a Democrat, ask them to name one accomplishment that Hillary Clinton had as Secretary of State. So Blitzer, to his credit, put the question to Clinton, and this was her answer.
You know, Wolf, I didn't get to see all of their debate, but I saw enough of it to know that this is just the usual back and forth political attacks, the kinds of things you say when you're on a debate stage and you really don't have much else to say. I didn't hear anything from any of them about how they're going to make college more affordable or get down student debt or get equal pay for equal work for women, what they're going to do to make sure that we deal with the challenges of raising incomes for hardworking people. So I don't really pay a lot of attention to this kind of rhetoric that heats up the debate stage. They're all trying to vie for more attention from, obviously, the Republican Party. I'm going to let them decide how best to do it. But if anybody's interested, you know, there's a long list about what I have done, and I'm very proud of it. You can read my book, Hard Choices, read about how I negotiated a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. You can read about how I put together the coalition that led to international sanctions against Iran. You can read about what I did when I was First Lady to get the Children's Health Insurance Program, or a senator working across the aisle on issues like getting better health care for our veterans.
First of all, Jim, she blew through about 45 seconds trying to think of something. And, of course, the setting up the coalition against Iran, which led to sanctions, and we see how that's working out. So what do you make of her answer?
I kept waiting for Mrs. Clinton. The question was, what are your accomplishments? The ceasefire with Hamas. Wasn't there like a whole conflict in Gaza in 2014? And weren't they building tunnels and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, good job. A 20-minute ceasefire. That's right. It's a step. I don't think it's really too much of an exaggeration to say that, look, it was certainly not a lasting ceasefire and really was kind of a pause in the fighting. And really, again, like, I had to look it up when you mentioned it. It's not like, it's a defining. Now, Benghazi, we know about that. We know the reset button. We know about that. We remember everything that didn't work. Periodically, you'd put this question to a Hillary supporter and say, you know, you really got to look at how she changed our relationship with Burma and or Myanmar. Call me crazy, Greg. We don't have a Burma-Myanmar-based foreign policy. Half of our listeners are like, that's Southeast Asia, right? Not Southwest. You know, kind of, you know, credit. So it's a long, rambling answer that indicates she doesn't have a good answer on this. You know, when you start saying, but, you know, back when I was First Lady and when I was in the Senate, those are some of my best accomplishments as Secretary of State, Greg.
Yes. The list, as other candidates have pointed out, of how things have gone backwards in different parts of the world is quite extensive, with the possible exception of Burma. Pretty much everywhere else has gone in the wrong direction. Also in that same interview, worth pointing out, Blitzer asked her, because Fiorina mentioned that as well in the debate, have you actually watched the Planned Parenthood videos? And she never answered the question, which obviously means she hasn't.
Safe assumption there, Greg. Just one other thing. Like, isn't it kind of amazing? Like, she gets that question and she seems like she doesn't have a ready answer.
Right.
Maybe when she starts running for office, she'll get more prepared for it.
That'll be on the relaunch, I guess. All right, on to the bad martini now. Speaking of Obama administration foreign policy going in the wrong direction, this is from Peter Baker of the New York Times. By any measure, President Obama's effort to train a Syrian opposition army to fight the Islamic State on the ground has been an abysmal failure. The military acknowledged this week that just 4 or 5 American-trained fighters are actually fighting. But the White House says it's not to blame. The finger, it says, should be pointed not at Mr. Obama, but at those who pressed him to attempt training Syrian rebels in the first place, a group that, in addition to congressional Republicans, happened to include former Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton. So much like everything else with the Obama administration, he gets the credit for everything that goes right and doesn't deserve the blame for anything that goes wrong. I know his initial policy, Jim, was to use military force after the red line until he backed off. But apparently there are only four or five people ready to take over the government.
Here you thought Five Guys was just a burger joint. it's also the forces we're supporting in Syria. Two interesting things about this. One is that maybe this is the upside of vacillation. This is the upside of doing everything halfway or half, you know, body part you want to insert here. So Obama kind of, sort of, aren't. We tried training these guys. We have a hard time vetting them. We have a hard time figuring out if they're any good. Half of them run away as soon as the fighting gets real. Half of them run away with our money. And we end up with just a handful of guys. And it doesn't work. And Obama says, see, I told you it was going to work. I told you I was going to do it badly. What's really kind of striking about this is that this is an administration that believes things can't work. And really, as you could tell, yeah, I think it's arguably quasi-isolationist. Just doesn't want to deal with situations like this. Well, you don't deal with the Syrian civil war and spreading into Iraq and things getting worse. You end up with a refugee crisis in Europe, right? I mean, if you ignore problems, they generally don't go away. They generally get worse. And if you do it halfway and it doesn't work, I'm not really sure it's really a rebuke to your critics that you couldn't execute the own policy that you said you're going to do. And yet in the minds of this administration, that's how you win. You know, you won the argument because you did it so badly. The whole thing seems like a stupid idea from the beginning. There's a line from Animal House. I'll paraphrase it. You screwed up. You trusted us, basically, is the philosophy here.
Which bleeds in perfectly to our crazy martini. A lot of foreign policy today in the three martini lunch. This is from the Associated Press. I hope I'm saying this guy's name right. Geir Lundestad writes in a book to be released on Thursday that the committee had expected the Nobel Peace Prize to deliver a boost to President Obama. Instead, the award was met with fierce criticism in the U.S., where many argued Obama had not been president long to have enough impact worthy of the Nobel. Quote, even many of Obama's supporters believe that the prize was a mistake. In that sense, the committee didn't achieve what it had hoped for. Speaking to the AP on Wednesday, Lundestad said he didn't disagree with the decision to award the president, but the committee thought it would strengthen Obama, and it didn't have this effect. Jim, I think you and I can both remember the fall of 2009 when this announcement came down, and just about everybody on the right was scratching their head and saying, for what? And ultimately, it turns out that even a lot of the people involved in this decision had the same idea.
It's like a really bitter vindication. It would have been really nice to say, well, he really did turn out to be this terrific president. People said it was the first Nobel Prize given on potential.
Right.
It's like one step away from the Nobel Participation Trophy. You showed up. We give credit to that. There are two things. I read a little bit about this in the morning, Joel. One of the things I think fascinating was if I were on the Nobel Committee, I would try really hard to not botch it by saying, well, I'm going to give it to this person and I hope they turn out well. Now, my colleague Jay Nordlinger has written a whole book about the history of the Nobel Peace Prize, writes some really interesting stuff. And he points out that, look, even some of the ones we really agree with, like in South Africa, or sometimes the ones we disagree with from the time they gave it to Yasser Arafat, if there are peace, you know, talks in progress and moment, there's some progress being made, they'll give the award kind of to encourage this and to say, okay, this is good, keep it going. So I suppose I can see that mentality, but ultimately you end up in a circumstance where you'll end up giving to somebody who really, really is not a good decision. I do think it's actually worse for them to come out and say, yeah, we shouldn't have done that. Yeah, we botched it. Bad choice. You know, we didn't know what we were doing. Can't take it back, but yeah, he didn't deserve it. And the second thing is, let's say, you know, they wanted to strengthen Obama, they said. One, I don't know if the job of the, you know, Nobel Peace Prize is to say, well, we like this American leader, so we're going to strengthen him and all that stuff. Although when you realize that they've given it to Obama, Jimmy Carter, and Al Gore, and just about else, did Kerry get one? No, right?
He's about to.
Okay, there you go. So Kerry will probably get one. Good point. That basically, like, you know, I think somebody did the numbers and, like, you know, if you've been nominated by the Republican, by the Democratic Party since 1976, you have a really good chance of getting a Nobel Peace Prize someday. And somewhere Bill Clinton is saying, guys, remember Northern Ireland, right? I worked really hard on that. Remember the White House with, you know, with Arafat and Shimon Peres? I'm sorry, Yitzhak Rabin. Sorry, my bad. This is what happens when I try to do a Clinton impression and don't look up my notes. But the gist being that it's kind of turned into this partisan political shtick every couple of years anyway. I think it looks bad, but if you really want to influence American culture, you got to understand American culture. And the fact they didn't realize that giving him the Nobel Peace Prize after like 4 months on the job, that they didn't realize that was going to hurt him, I think says a great deal about them, that they just simply don't understand the world that they're allegedly trying to promote peace in.
Yeah, You could probably make the argument that Gore, Carter, and possibly even Obama were all designed to poke George W. Bush.
And, oh, yeah.
And if you have learned a lesson, Nobel Committee, you have another one coming up here in a few weeks. And obviously, a lot of people are going to push you to give it to Kerry and probably the Iranian foreign minister, as odd as that sounds. So hope you have learned from history.
You know, it'll be interesting. I mean, Arafat was pretty bad, but I think if they give it to the Iranian foreign minister, or you know, I mean, I guess we should be glad they didn't give it to the Ayatollah himself. People already thought it was kind of awkward to give a Nobel Peace Prize to a president who had a kill list. Now, I like the kill list, but I'm just kind of observing, you know. And now the idea that if you give it to the, you know, like the Iranians, it might be giving it to the first regime who's like used nuclear weapons against foes, you know, at some point down the road. So that'll be a. We'll be more worried about the radioactivity and the breakout of global nuclear war, but we'll also be really saying, hey, you know, nice job, Nobel Committee. You know?
Yeah, you don't want death to America to be part of the Nobel Peace Prize acceptance speech. So you
That's a good point. Yeah, it'd be a little awkward, right? Yeah.
Oh, man. On that note.
That's a way to end the week.
Have a fabulous weekend. Talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Monday for the next Three Martini Lunch.